marketing is about value. This is a very complicated world. It's a very noisy world. And we're not going to get a chance to get people to remember much about us. No company does. And so we have to be really clear on what we want them to know about us.
Let's pretend that you didn't arrive before Jake to the podcast, Oscar.
I'm brand new. I've just entered the chat. We're all good.
let's just you guys lie. Can talk to me instead. Just pretend I'm the guest.
That sounds good. Yeah.
So this is In Growth We Trust with Oscar and Johan interviewing Jake today.
We've got some spicy questions lined up.
How are you, Oscar?
Yeah, all good. Really good to be here. Yeah, you guys have got a great thing going on. I've been listening to the podcast for a few months now. Always get a lot of insight from it. So, yeah, amazing to be here.
Oh, thanks. It's good to hear. You're coming in the right week because we're flying this week. The numbers have been crazy. So, you know, next week is your turn. Hopefully, it will continue.
Let's hope we can continue the upward trend.
It'll be fine. So the reason why I think it'll be fine is because you seem to be a great guy, even though we just met. What we're going to talk about is probably one of the trendiest or like the most successful topic that we had so far, which is community. So for those listening from the beginning, we're going to talk about community and building community in fintech. Specifically, but also maybe you will go a bit on the side of that. But that's why I'm excited, because I think it's a great topic, and there's still a lot of people out there, marketers out there, trying to understand, crack what community
crack the code.
Means. Yeah, crack the code.
Yeah,
if there is one. that's the reason. How was your week so far? All good.
Yeah, it's been very good. Busy as always. We're just gearing up for our launch in France in a couple of weeks' time, which is very exciting. It's been a long time coming. We've been in the UK, we've been in Poland, Belgium for just about a year or so, a little bit longer in the UK. But we finally are launching in France, which is very exciting. We're actually a French-based company. The founder's in France as well. So, we've got a big launch event in a couple of weeks there before we open to the public. So, yeah, really kind of going up for that. But it's a super cool thing to be a part of, for sure.
What's the name of the company?
Yeah, so I'm head of marketing at Shares. We are a community-driven investment platform founded in France, but we've been active in the UK, for just about 18 months now. Also, what we're really focusing on is, you know, building a kind of community experience around the world of investing. I'm sure we can go into this in a little bit more detail later. But what we're really looking at doing is, okay, first of all, building a first-class investing product, but also integrating a community kind of social experience, a social layer that we add on top of the investing experience as well.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that's the most interesting about Shares, is that it was built with social and community at the core of the product, right? And if you go a little bit more in detail, like, how does it work in the product? So I'm curious.
Yeah, so I think first of all, it's kind of probably quite useful to give, you know, I think a bit of a lay of the land in terms of where the investing space is and where it's kind of been moving. You know, over the past kind of 10 years, it's been like an incredible like revolution in terms of, you know, the investment tools that we all have available to us. I think for so long, you know, investing, it was so difficult to get involved in. It was, you know, investing, you had to know a broker, you had to have the means to do that. It all felt kind of very kind of, you know, guarded and kind of very kind of secretive. And of course, you know, over the past, you know, 10 years or so, you've had the explosion of kind of, you know, these neo brokers, like amazing. Like we all have these tools in our pockets that we can use to invest in. Like that's such, I think, like a monumental shift in, you know, our attitudes to investing is fantastic. But I think what's also kind of come with that is, you know, even though we all have the tools now to invest a lot more easily, even if you can use an app and, you know, buy Apple or Tesla shares in a couple of clicks, what you still don't necessarily have is the right information to help you make those investment decisions. Like investing has still been I think a very single player experience. And what we're really looking to do at Shares is to turn investing into much more of a multiplayer experience. So we're not just a utility. We're really building a community experience into the product as well. So when you're inside the Shares app, you know, okay, you're able to buy fractional shares and in France, ETFs and crypto as well, you know, just like other apps that, you know, are kind of, you know, available and in use. But really what we're doing is then adding in this kind of really fascinating social layer. So you can add your friends, you can see what they have invested in. You can follow more experienced investors and actually kind of understand what they're buying as well. And so instead of needing to, you know, jump around to a subreddit here or a Discord server there or another kind of blog here, you know, actually all the information that you need to make smart investment decisions is really kind of encapsulated within one experience. So cool, Johan, like I can follow you on the app. I can see that you've bought a certain stock and I can see why you've decided to buy that as well. And then I can, you know, if that seems like, you know, a logical decision for me to make as well, I can then go and make that purchase too. So we're really kind of layering up both the investment experience with that social driven community layer as well.
That's super cool. Just to zoom out a little bit, or maybe go back in time. Like, where did you come before Shares? Like, what did you do before that?
Yeah. So I've been in marketing for just about kind of 10 years by this stage. I think realized the other day the first ever campaign I worked on for a brand was on Vine. So shout out to Vine, RIP Vine. Like, I used to love Vine so much. So that gives you like a bit of a feel for kind of when I first got started. Started really, in kind of, you know, specialist social agencies. And back, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, it was a really fantastic time for kind of specialist social kind of content agencies. Loads of big brands were just kind of first dipping their toes into the world of social and brand building and community building. They knew they had to be doing it. They didn't, I think, quite at that stage understand what the impact would be on their brands. But yeah, had the kind of pleasure of working on campaigns for the likes of Red Bull, North Face, Fiat Chrysler was my big client for a couple of years. So had a really great time agency world, then moved brand side. So did a few years in the NGO space at WaterAid. Which was actually like an incredible experience. Learned so much in terms of retention. Like, one thing that charities are so amazing at doing is actually kind of that stewardship and that retention piece. And I still kind of take a lot of the insights that I kind of, you know, got from charity days through to kind of fintech now, and then made the move into fintech, just about 3 years ago now. So first at Clio, as everything was really kind of going crazy for them in the US. So worked there as a head of social lead up until their Series C. It was an amazing thing to be a part of, and that team is still kind of absolutely killing it. And then moved to Shares just about 18 months ago, first in a head of social role, and then moving up into head of marketing. So it's really been quite an interesting journey with a few left and right turns. Here we are at Shares.
I've got a fun story, actually. You mentioned Clio, and the CEO is Barney, right? Barney has CEO.
Yeah.
And if I go to my LinkedIn messages and I go to message him, there's two messages. And the first one is from 2017, where I'm like, that's when they were kind of just getting started or just blowing up. And I was obviously looking for a job at that point because I like hit him up for a job and he ignored the message. And then the second one was from 2020 when I was also looking for a job. And I was like, hey, I messaged you like 4 years ago. I knew you were going to blow up. Are you going to reply now? And he still didn't reply. So there we go.
Oh man.
I'm so sorry. Have you sent him a message? This?
I'm not. Yeah, if he listens to this, maybe he'll message me and then I can ignore him.
Yeah, that's why we're doing the podcast. It's like the people that rejected us all these years, now they listen to this. They're like, fuck, I should have hired this guy. It's like crazy.
It's like, if only we took that chance. If only we replied to that LinkedIn message.
If only.
Just think where you'll be now. I do have a question actually. So obviously your background is, there's a lot of social in there, and looking at the Shares social, it's definitely got its own kind of vibe. How, for everyone listening that is interested in like a social strategies and how to scale an account and how to have a voice in social, you obviously have been in that world for a long time. What is kind of your advice, or maybe what is it that you think Shares do really well when it comes to their socials?
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I think like this is like the million-dollar question, right? Is I think especially in fintech, I really see the organic social growth piece as like one of the big untapped channels that I think can kind of get ignored sometimes. And I think there's a few reasons behind that. I think often, especially at early stage, focuses, of course, is going to be on kind of product and building out MVP and, you know, getting those first users in. And the brand piece, the social piece, the community piece, I think is sometimes seen as a bit of a luxury. It's like a nice add-on to kind of, you know, have on the side that's going to do something someday, but isn't kind of prioritized kind of right now. And I think the piece that I've really been able to kind of focus in, you know, during, you know, the different kind of companies that I've worked at, has really been about, you know, actually moving social kind of much more centrally to the work that brands are doing. And I think especially in fintech, I think, as I mentioned, like that, I think is such a huge play right now. And I think we're really seeing it as, you know, there was a period where organic reach was completely dead, right? You know, there was a very tricky time working in social where unless you were spending money and boosting posts and, you know, running that kind of paid side of things, organic wasn't going to do too much for you. Some exceptions, but generally really, really tough to do. You know, the past few years, we've seen the explosion of TikTok and Reels and Shorts. Like it's an amazing time to work in social marketing right now because the playing field is so, so leveled, right? You can have an account with, you know, 10 followers on TikTok and drive a million views. Like that's an incredible opportunity. I think especially for early stage companies, it applies to everyone. But I think if you're early stage, it's like, well, actually, that's probably going to be the most cost efficient way by far to reach an audience in a way that just wasn't possible a few years ago. So I think really when it's about thinking about the, you know, social strategy piece, I think the really key piece to really focus on is like in the first place, like why are you using these channels and what do you want to get out of them? I think there's this big challenge, I think, in really kind of aligning, you know, your business strategy and your brand strategy together. Almost if we kind of, you know, identify business strategy, right, is where are you playing and how are you going to win there? And then we look at the brand strategy as the way that we can kind of shift perceptions to really kind of align those values around that business strategy. I think that gives you quite a nice foundation to really start with. So the example I'd give, you know, at Clio, what we really wanted to look at was, well, you know, the business strategy was we want to help people feel less stressed about their money. We want people to feel better about money. We want people to feel more comfortable talking about money. And so, cool, we could use our social channels then to really ladder up to that business strategy. We don't want audiences to feel scared about this topic. We want to create content that's going to help people talk and share about the good sides and the bad sides of what money is. And that laddered up perfectly to what the product is as well. And so we had this really kind of beautiful synergy. And I think that worked so, so well, because when you're reaching out to new audiences and you have a piece of TikTok content that blows up, the product and the promise that the product contains is encapsulated in that content really well. And that has so many effects. Then when we look at acquisition, when we look at retargeting, we're building up this kind of intangible kind of brand, kind of fandom and loyalty. So I think it's really about starting with that piece of understanding, look, where are you playing from a product perspective, from a business perspective, and really being kind of very critical around the content that you're creating to ensure that it's really laddering up to that business proposition. I think that's the real opportunity from an organic social perspective, 100%.
Brilliant. Yeah, that makes sense. And is a focus of Share's strategy now to build a community within those feeds as well?
Definitely. I mean, I think at Share's, you know, it's in a bit of a different place, right? You know, what we really want to be doing at Share's from, you know, a business perspective is, of course, you know, helping audiences to invest with a more informed kind of state of mind. We want people to invest smarter. Mm-hmm. Like that's our business proposition that we keep going back to. And so fantastic from our social content. That gives us, I think, such an interesting kind of canvas to work with. Like how does our content help audiences to make smarter investment decisions? And I think what's that has really allowed us to do is to really kind of break out from a lot of investment content that's out there. You know, there's so much content that you can find, whether it's on blogs, whether it's on social, whether it's from other kind of neo brokers, that it focuses very heavily on education. And you kind of find a lot of brands speaking in this space where it's like, you know, what is the S&P 500 or like what's an ETF? And it's like, okay, like cool, like there's nothing wrong with that per se, but you can find this stuff anywhere. And so we've thought a bit laterally about this and we said, okay, how can we really like equip our audiences with the kind of information that's going to help them make more informed decisions? So we've taken this approach of, cool, like mini documentaries about the companies that you can buy on shares. I think one of our best performing videos this year, which I still love so much, we did this piece on the rise and fall and rise again of Crocs. So Crocs is now like a $9 billion company, right? Yeah, but it's had this amazing journey. Yeah, right. And we brought in all of this stuff around like their branding and their partnerships and how, you know, they started as this brand that was, you know, very, you know, cool with like dads, then became incredibly uncool. Now it's had this like resurgence. But also this is, you know, a brand with, you know, huge market cap. You can buy them on shares. But we're building this narrative around this, right? We're giving audiences like a reason to care about, you know, you see a stock inside an app and it's just like a little icon. But how can we build that resonance around the products as well, I think is really what we're looking at with our social content.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's super easy to just open up those, you know, like a shares or like a Robinhood or whatever and just look at the recent trending numbers and just be like, oh, whatever, I'll buy that, and you don't care anything about it. But in reality, I think, in my opinion, you should invest in a company that you use or a company that you care about or that you know something about. So that definitely makes sense. I also really love the kind of theme that you guys have got going at the moment, where you ask if people can name a female billionaire. I think that's really good. I really love that. I'm kind of passionate about that kind of stuff, so that really resonates with me, and I think that's great.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting journey with like a lot of this content, because again, it's, I mentioned that this earlier, it's all about how can we think in the most lateral way to talk creatively about investing in a way that's actually going to kind of make people like just give a shit about what we're talking about. Yeah. I think especially in investing, right? Like the biggest challenge that we face is apathy. Like we all know on an ambient level that we should be doing something positive with our money. To build a financial future. I think there's like this kind of pretty like broad understanding that, you know, that is best practice. But in the UK, it's like the stat is only 36% of people are actually investing right now. Mm. And in France, it's even lower. In France, it's like 19%, right? Oh, so the challenge that we've got is, obviously people are investing passively through their pensions, right? But they're not actively, you know, choosing where their money's going. So this is like, that was the challenge that we've really set ourselves. Is how can we get people excited about the concept of investing, and how can we give people the information to start thinking critically, like around the world of finance? And the street interview piece has also been, I think, really, really powerful for us, where we've been able to kind of, you know, think about kind of questions that aren't directly like just about investing. We're not just going up to people and saying, "Do you invest?" We did try that, and it just didn't work. Yeah. How to answer that. Going up to random people on the street and saying, "Do you invest? What do you invest in?" People just like don't know what to answer. But we've tapped into these like broader topics. Like we've got another format that's really worked for us. I've started seeing some competitors picking up on recently, actually. Would you rather take £1 million today or a penny that doubles every day for a month? And this is like a classic example to demonstrate compound interest, right? Yeah. It's like one of the key reasons why investing long term is so, so crucial. So we can bring in these topics around investing without needing to kind of, you know, just, you know, give audiences, you know, what is compound interest or, you know, what is an ETF? You can get them to think a bit more critically about this kind of content. And it's a format that's worked just super, super well for us.
Yeah, it's really cool. And then you can use those kind of classic examples, like the penny doubling example, and bring it to like a new audience that might not be aware of that, but also on a platform where stuff goes viral when it's, you know, like mind-blowing, you know, that's the most impactful, in my opinion, content that is shareable and gets that broad reach, when you can kind of teach something, they're like, holy shit, is that true? So it's really interesting being able to like take that, it's completely aligned to your business, use it in a way that kind of works with a new audience, and then get it on a channel that gives you that mass exposure.
That's it. And I think the kind of channel piece here is also like, so important. Is, you know, we have a broader kind of brand strategy, but we're very careful to think very carefully around, you know, what's really going to resonate on a specific platform, and to create content that is in the style of that platform as well. And I think, you know, then from a growth perspective, things get really interesting, right? Because if we can create these street interviews, you know, we can go out and film, you know, 20 interviews in an afternoon, you know, with a variety of questions. you know, these are going viral on like a pretty regular basis now. I think we've kind of really found some formats that have kind of really resonated and really worked for us. Yeah. So we can drive that organic reach right at the top of the funnel. Some of these interviews have done like, I think our top performing one is on 9 million views. Wow. At the moment. And that was completely organically, which is, you know, just like incredible to see.
Amazing.
But then when we can retarget from that, actually the acquisition piece is then much more cost efficient because we're not just pumping paid into the top of funnel piece. Yeah. The organic piece at the top, like that is driving that reach that previously, you know, 3 years ago, we would have paid to get. So now we're getting that organic reach, a lot. And those audiences are never going to be engaged because they're not choosing to see that content. It's pumped into their timeline as a sponsored piece of content. So now we can get that organically. And then as we retarget, if we think about that funnel, well, the funnel is already much, much tighter because audiences have engaged with it organically because they actually, you know, are enjoying the content. Yeah. So then when we move down to middle and bottom of the funnel, the audience is that bit more qualified.
Yeah.
So that's where we've really seen 100% like the most impactful kind of gains from a growth perspective from this content.
Have this been transformative in terms of your cost of acquisition and like payback period and things like that? Like, not to share numbers, but like how transformative has this been to turn into this type of organic content? And like anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, just go on shares. TikTok account and go check out those videos. You'll see what we mean. But yeah, can you talk a little bit about that, like from a business point of view? Like, has it been like, you know, a little drop in the ocean, or was it a big swing?
Yeah, I'd say it's been super significant for us. And you know, it's really interesting. I guess, you know, when you're in the position that we are, you know, we're still comparatively speaking, a challenger brand in this space, right? We haven't got massive budgets to spend, and we need to really be very kind of finely tuned into, you know, what our kind of performance marketing is doing. I think, again, like this is where the really big opportunity, right, is something that I've definitely seen in some other situations is, you know, this big kind of separation between your brand and your content team and then your performance marketing team as well. And I think that's still definitely something that happens. You know, brands who are smart about it know that, you know, these things should really kind of sit together. So we work so closely with our performance team to really look at like, okay, what's the perfect content that sits within that kind of funnel? It doesn't make sense to only use street interviews in your acquisition kind of strategy. But, you know, as I mentioned, from an organic perspective, like that's the cheapest reach, the cheapest CPM we're ever going to get. And where we've really seen, I think, the value from a business perspective is looking at then what type of content follows that afterwards. Yeah. Like that's where we've really kind of driven the optimizations. Mm. So looking at how we then can create content that is obviously then kind of pushing much more directly to a download. But what kind of content is it? Is it content that is directly to camera? Is it content potentially using external creators? There's been a bunch of different models that we've tried. Yeah. But what's worked really well is, you know, we then have an external kind of content creation team as well. So we can very quickly try these different pieces of creative that we can turn around super, super quickly to kind of really test, you know, what's going to work best at the bottom of the funnel as well. So yeah, without going into numbers, what I would say is, you know, ultimately, if you can drive that cheap CPM at the top of the funnel, that's going to affect everything else.
Do it.
Yeah,
that's what I would summarize it. Now it's funny because I spoke about this in the past in a podcast, but we both in the same field. Me working at Nude as well, and funny enough, we've been very successful with street interviews and things like that too. And I spoke about this in previous episodes. Like it's been transformative. And it's interesting because I think it's so untapped still, and it applies to any business. It's not just fintech. Obviously, it's transformative to fintech, and it's even more specific in our case at Nude because none of our competitors are even on TikTok to begin with. So
perfect. It's amazing, so
it's even better. But this kind of content strategy, especially on TikTok, with this type of content that generates so much organic engagement, and if you're kind of a new company and have your brand and performance team together working on that stuff, it's you're already probably like 10 to 20 times more efficient than a bigger company that's spending, you know, 10 to 20 times more than you. So, so it's really, really, really important. That's why I wanted to spend a bit of time on this because it's cool. Really cool.
It might be too early to know, but have you seen any initial kind of results from your partnership with the Williams sisters? That was pretty impressive when I saw that you guys have managed to bag that.
Yeah, it's a super amazing one with Williams sisters. We actually kind of shot a first campaign out with them in Florida. I think it was January this year. So that's still in the pipeline. We're kind of waiting for the perfect time. And to be honest, it's all about, you know, really making sure that everything is aligned internally before we really kind of go live with that. Obviously, France is going to be a huge, huge market for us. We're actually the first French investment app to be certified by both of the authorization bodies in France, which is like a massive, massive win. It's why we haven't launched there yet. We are waiting for that authorization. And so when we launch that campaign, you know, it's like ultimately it's like from a brand perspective can be slightly frustrating, right? It's like we've got this amazing campaign with the Williams sisters after we actually shot with them. It's kind of crazy. Their team were like, you realize that you're actually the first brand since Apple to have them both together in a campaign. Because it's so tricky, right? Like getting Venus is tough. Getting Serena is tough. Getting them both together in the same place at the same time is even more difficult. Everything is like ready and good to go, basically. But we're just waiting for the perfect time. I think that's like a really important learning, right? Is especially when you're at an early stage, I think there's like a tendency to, you know, want to kind of rush into kind of getting as much stuff out there as possible and making that big splash. And, you know, of course you need to have some of that kind of ecosystem live and, you know, driving value. But, you know, when you, I think, look at these bigger brand campaigns, I think it's a really important point to be kind of conscious of exactly when it's going to drive the most value for you. Especially from a product perspective, time is everything, right? And, you know, that pound that you spend today, actually, if you spend it in 6 months' time, might be, you know, significantly more efficient and effective. So that's the piece on that front. But it's coming. And when it launches, I think people are going to be pretty blown away by it. I think it's a really exciting piece of work for sure.
Nice.
That's cool. You got to buy those Williams shares at the right time, right?
If you wanted a confirmation that London is the capital of fintech company, French founders launched their French company in the UK first before France. That's how that's how much London is there.
And that's the UK it. Is, that's yeah. it. It's the place to be.
That's how much the UK is leading the way in fintech. Anyway, it's just a joke. I wanted to go back to community because I feel like we introduce the topic on this and then we'll just slide it away from it a little bit. But how do you articulate community at Shares, basically, besides the product? Well, I mean, including the product piece, actually, which is like a significant part of it, but is there other components and how do they fit together?
So I think, you know, first of all, it's like, you know, community, it's such a buzzword right now, right? I think you mentioned at the start, you know, it's the cool, sexy thing. And that's great if you work in the space, but I think that also comes with some drawbacks, right? Because community kind of gets distorted. And I think, you know, community, it's such a huge kind of concept, right? Like community, you know, contrary to popular belief, was not invented 5 years ago in marketing, right? Like community has existed since like the start of civilization. And I think it's quite important to like note that, and the way that, you know, if we look at communities over the course of history, like what a community actually is and also like what a community isn't. And I think, you know, especially in marketing, you know, like a community is not social followers. A community is not just people coming to your events. Like that's an audience, right? Yeah. And your audience can still exhibit traits of community, but it doesn't make them a community per se.
The worst thing that frustrates me about community is when I see like some founders or whoever on LinkedIn saying like they're talking about their community and then talking about their Instagram following, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, I keep like, quiet. It's really frustrating.
It's just not it.
Read. Yeah, it's not.
It's just not it. It's just not it. So I think, you know, like the way that I always like to think of community is that it should be, you know, a shared peer-to-peer network with those audiences brought together by a mutual shared interest.
Yeah.
And the important thing as well is there should be some element of like mutual value creation that's also bringing people to come together as well. So you're there for the same reason. And there's also something that you're going to get out of it from your peer-to-peer connections, from your connection with the brand as well. So like, it's a bit of a virtuous circle, I think, yeah, in the way that a true community should really exist. For us at Shares, like we're in a really, I think, fantastic, really exciting position because community is really baked into the product itself. So we have that like immediately. When you come into the Shares app, you are not just buying and selling different shares. You are also participating in a community experience. When you invest in any kind of single trade, you're given a prompt to start kind of sharing why you've invested. When you sell, you're given a prompt as well. So you're immediately kind of participating in that conversation. People can then comment on the investments that you've made too. And that is the very definition for me of what community can really be, which is people are there with a shared mutual interest. There is a peer-to-peer network because you are learning and understanding why other people have made those decisions. And there's mutual value creation. You know, you are gaining insights. You're gaining an understanding of why people have made certain decisions that you can then use to inform your own decisions as well. So from a product perspective, it's like, that's like locked in, right? Like we have that, and that's a really, really fantastic kind of foundation to build on. I think like when we then look at, you know, how we've used kind of community across other channels, you know, I think that can kind of spread out in so many different ways. And again, it's about really understanding like what audience is getting from this experience. Like I think the trap that a lot of brands fall into is that, you know, the mode of communication becomes like a broadcast channel, right? And you are kind of pumping out kind of content. And, you know, if a user kind of comments on your Instagram post or on your TikTok and then someone else comments, like that does not make a community because then there's no dynamism. There's no reciprocal in that kind of conversation.
Yeah.
I think it's about really kind of looking at, you know, the energy that you're creating in these different kind of channels and verticals. Right now we've had a really successful kind of founding members launch in France. So we opened up a wait list to bring in early stage users to the app in France. We've got a super active Slack channel that's been amazing to see actually. And we're getting these like constant feedback loops from these early users. They're suggesting changes to the product. Yeah. We have our team who are in there who are responding and engaging. We're getting feedback on anything from bugs, kind of any product suggestions. So that's like a really, I think, like beautiful example on a very small scale.
Yeah.
But, you know, your community doesn't necessarily have to be a big thing. That these can exist in kind of quite micro pockets of your channel, ecosystem, and still kind of drive kind of huge value there.
One thing is, it's obviously really amazing to have a product which has community at its core, and it's like a legit USP or reason for the product to exist. You know, like the fact that you guys aren't just you don't just buy shares and you can see what your friends have bought. You have the element where people can comment on, you know, why they bought something, and it actually has a legit reason for the community and bringing your friends in, and that has the obviously immediate growth effects of having an amazing network effect, right? The more people that come in, the more trades that you're seeing, the more things you're not missing out on because you're seeing your friends do it. And it's obviously super powerful. So if you're a business that can be built around like community first idea, I think that's probably one of the most powerful from a growth perspective, especially organic growth perspective you can have. But just picking up on something you just said, and I completely agree about community and audience being two separate things. And I think I asked this question to Tom Yonder, who was on a podcast, just had his episode beaten in terms of day one listens, unfortunately, Tom. But we were talking
about... Take that,
Tom. We were talking about building a community, and I asked him, is it possible to have a community on a channel like Instagram? Like, can you build a community on Instagram, or do you always build an audience on Instagram? Does a community need more of a hub and naturally probably be smaller than the average large Instagram channel? What do you think about that, Oscar?
That's such a good question. I need to go back and listen to Tom's episode to see what he said on this as well. I'd be really interested to know. It's a really, really interesting one. So I think there are kind of two ways of looking at this, right? There's one way, which is that just, okay, Instagram is like a broadcast channel and you're pumping out content. And I think the challenge with associating community with that is often like a lot of our content, especially, right, you know, we're doing really big numbers on it, but it's not going to audiences who have necessarily seen our content before. And they're not necessarily following us afterwards, right? And like that is just the nature of these platforms. You consume the content, you enjoy it, you engage with it, maybe you share it with a friend, but then you're not necessarily sticking about for additional content. Maybe you're more likely to be served our content again because you've engaged with it the first time, or you're more likely to be retargeted. I think that's where the interesting point comes in, right? I think the community build happens less on the content itself and happens more when you can integrate it into that kind of growth funnel. So that's when, brilliant, we can engage users with the initial piece of content, we target them, get them into the app, and that's really when the community piece, I think, is going to happen. So I think it's like, I think it's really, it's a challenge to see building social audiences and building followers. Like I can't in good conscience say, oh yeah, like we have a massive community on social, because I think we're building a good audience there. And we are getting engaged comments and we're getting kind of really insightful pieces of kind of, yeah, of engagement from users there.
Yeah.
Does that quantify as community? I think I'm like really strict on this, right? And like, I have a very clear idea of what community is and what community isn't. And like, I think the other thing to point in here is like, you don't need to build community everywhere. Like community should happen in the space where it makes sense to build community. For us, like we want to build community inside the product. Like that's what our play is.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important point for a lot of brands, right? I think like ultimately, like every brand has a right to build a community, but it's not right for every brand. I think that's where the challenges really come in. It's like you get like, I don't know, like a paint brand trying to build community. And it's like, yo, like, no one's like in the community for like paints, like that's a transactional purchase, and you can follow that brand on Instagram and like love their content, but like that's not a community. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for us, it's like I'm not going to sit here and say, cool, like our social audiences equate perfectly with community. There are some elements that I believe are demonstrative of community energy and ideology in terms of, okay, not just follower growth, but engagement and comments and the kind of sentiment we get around the content that we put out. Mm. But if we just build community or audience on social, like ultimately, like that's not going to drive to the bottom line, which is we want users to come into the app and be a part of the community there. So I think that's how I'd see it. I realize that's like quite a diplomatic answer.
You're good.
But
cool.
That's
good.
Something, you know, it's like where it sits, you know.
Yeah, I like it. It's like its own little funnel, right? You're using your, you're converting your audience into a community through your product. That seems like a sensible way to approach it.
I would say for the paint example that you gave, I'm not sure you're talking about, but I have a brand in mind that maybe you're thinking about. It could work if it's like interior design, right? If it's a broader type of topic, and then maybe there's some interesting exchange that can happen between people.
I mean, like, I mean, it's like, look, like, if you're a brand in like any space and you can really think about the value of community creation, which going back to that definition that I was talking about earlier, right? Like, if you can, you know, hand on heart say, you know, we are bringing people together around a shared interest, there's mutually beneficial value creation, then like, fantastic. And I think, right, like, you know, I bet a paint brand could do an amazing thing where they're bringing in interior designers and artists and creatives into a space, like 100%. Personally, like that's not what I see in that. And paint was just a random example off the top of my head. Nothing against industry. Okay. I'm sure there are some amazing community marketers within the paint industry. But what I'm saying is just building social audiences there does not equate to community in my opinion.
No, it's true. Oh, you know, I've got a funny I thought about community this week ahead of this episode, because there's this amazing 3-part series on Netflix about a cult called Twin Flames.
Oh yeah,
something like that. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called Surviving.
No, Twin I need Flame. To check it out, man.
And I love these like cult type of documentaries, because if you want a masterclass into building a community, people that build a cult are the best. Are the best in that domain outside of marketers. But I was watching it, and we started it. I think we watched one out of three, and they were like, we started a Facebook group page. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is like marketing 101. Let's go. And then it was talking about, you know, like the exchange between people. And then they were giving roles to certain people within the community to teach other people. So they were creating layers and hierarchy between the people within the community. Like, I really recommend any marketers to go and watch this documentary, because even though it's sad and they did a lot of bad stuff to people, there's a lot of lessons into community building.
Study the cult. Beneficial value creation, like, yeah. Inside the cult. Yeah.
Oh, man. No, that's cool. I wanted to ask you this actually earlier. Why do you think fintech has, like, in general, the industry has had such a weird relationship with marketing, like brand and community in a way? Like, why is it behind, and why is it still behind, really? Like, what you guys are doing, not many companies are doing, even like the big guys, like the, you know, the Monzos and Revoluts of the world, like, they're still not, you know, A+ in all of these strategies, even though they've got all the money they want and all the teams they need to do these things. What do you think that is?
I think, like, number one, it's probably a question of culture. I think that comes right from the top, right? And I think a lot of companies, you know, if the founder is from a product background or an engineering background, that is often the thing that is kind of focused on first. I think that's like a really natural byproduct of your founder's background. And, you know, not many founders come from a marketing role or like a marketing background. Like, it doesn't happen quite so often, especially in fintech. There aren't that many examples, I don't think, not that I'm aware of anyway. And so I think I touched on this earlier. I think what happens is, you know, the product is really the piece that is focused on, and that makes sense as well. You know, you have to build that really strong kind of product. You have to build something that's sticky and is going to really drive acquisition and retention 100%. But then I think there is this sort of mindset that then sees social and brand marketing and community building as something that will kind of come later. But I think the really big challenge with that then is that, you know, if you can't build intangible, like, emotional value around your brand, it usually means that you're competing on, like, two things, like, one of which is, like, products and features.
Yeah.
Now, that's a challenge, right? Because that's expensive to build. It takes time to build. Or you're competing on price, and someone will always do it cheaper, right?
Yeah.
And so if you can build the intangible value around your brand at the earliest possible stage, you're immediately putting yourself at a massive advantage. I think right now it's like there is such a huge opportunity for fintechs who are not spending huge amounts of money on marketing yet. You know, what we did at Shares, you know, we stole one of our meeting rooms, turned it into a studio. We hired a fantastic content creator. So shout out to Alex, who's like absolutely killing it. We write scripts on a weekly basis around these topics that we're digging into. Alex shoots, he edits, he cuts everything together. Like, he's an absolute master. And on a weekly basis, like, we have this kind of super engaging, super social first content that we can kind of continue to create. And then with the street interviews as well, it's a similar process, right? Like, we can jump out, we head outside the office, we can go out for an afternoon and potentially get 10 pieces of content that are kind of, you know, all perform super, super well. So the opportunity is absolutely huge, but I think it's still a question of mindset, you know, especially at the top, which is actually kind of where marketing can really fit into this. I think as well, like, if we look at, you know, historically, there was an amazing time, you know, 2014, 15, 16, where, you know, Facebook ads were super cheap, CPMs were super, super cost efficient. You know, there were unicorns built off the back of Facebook ads, right? You know, you look at Allbirds, you look at Warby Parker, you know, they built these empires based on, you know, simple landing pages and well-targeted Facebook ads. Like, that was the dream, and like that dream has now turned into a nightmare where CPMs are like 3 times higher than they were a few years ago. And so you can't rely on just kind of pumping money into your your Meta ads or to your TikTok ads, because there are 100 brands doing the same thing. So you have to build something else which sits outside of just pure performance marketing. And that's where the brand side, I think, really comes in. I think we are seeing a shift now. I think it is starting to happen because it's a necessity. But I think that's where we're at. There has been this kind of this slow realization, actually, that you need to build something else.
I think there's, I think in the next 10 years, we'll see more and more founders and CEO are also personalities of the brand baked into the 100%. Brand itself. I think it's still very, very rare, especially in fintech. Like, it's not, it doesn't happen in fintech yet. But like the founder himself being the the creator, founder creator. And I think that's going to be very strong, because in everything that we just mentioned, it will make the job so much easier if the founder is the one being like, guys, I've got this idea, we can make 10 videos this morning. Let's just film film me and let's go.
And that's the next generation of founders, right? It's founders who have grown up creating content. It's like creating content isn't a challenge. It's like second nature. And documenting the journey. Like, I love what Nothing do. Like, they have an amazing strategy around their CEO. The phone company. They have an amazing strategy where their CEO, he's not creating the content, but they have this incredible YouTube channel. I'd encourage anyone to go and check it out. It's like, I think, like best in class, forward thinking, long form content, where the CEO is like, he is a central part of all of the content. And he'll do videos comparing the latest iPhone to the new Nothing phone, and kind of quite sort of like critically, like breaking down what he likes about both pieces. But he is front and center for all that content. So I think it's a really nice like template for what we might see moving forwards.
Interesting. Very interesting.
I was going to see if you, you know, being in like fintech and community, there's like an overlap in both of those two things in like the crypto space. Certainly maybe 2 or 3 years ago, at the moment it's kind of gone a bit quiet. But there was a point in which community was such a focus, because in order to be, you know, in order to be like a scaling crypto business or company or product, you had to have a solid community, and all of these products had like amazing communities, and probably in my opinion some of the best examples of what a community can be in terms of, you know, people supporting each other and just naturally not being forced kind of to do something, but naturally coming together around it. I haven't necessarily seen that outside of the crypto space potentially. But I wonder if you got any thoughts on that, or if you had any, like, if you were in that space maybe a couple of years ago when that was around, and if it kind of it was inspirational in any way in terms of what a community could be for a business or a product.
Definitely. I mean, I think some of those kind of communities, like at the time, they felt almost very like utopian, right? There were people kind of, you know, betting everything on these super small projects. You know, most of them kind of failed, which I think was probably pretty tricky to say the least. The way I see this though is like, look, like you go to Reddit and like you'll still see these communities built around finance that I think are still thriving and really, really interesting places. Wall Street Bets is obviously like the most prominent example, but you know, if you go into, you know, more of like the personal finance categories, UK personal finance is like the other really, really, really kind of big one. It's, these communities are very much there and thriving. I think the whole Discord, ICO, NFT drop situation, I think, you know, the bottom fell out of that because I think there was one kind of crucial piece missing, was that the community energy was built solely by the expectation on a single coin or a single NFT. And then as the rug pull phenomenon, you know, became something that happened very, very regularly, I think the confidence in those communities really kind of fell away, right? And maybe that's like an important piece to note, right? Is the community that you're building, like the value has to feel, I think, three-dimensional. There has to be this like reciprocal idea of like, you're on board with us because we are providing you with kind of value, and you can exchange ideas together. And it's not all riding on this one incredibly volatile asset. I think that's a very difficult thing long-term anyway to build a community around. But I mean, like, there was a really interesting time, and I think, you know, definitely when the company was first founded, Discord and Reddit and the way that communities were engaging with each other on their platforms around the topic of finance, not just crypto, but finance in general, was definitely a real kind of indication there was an appetite for conversations in this space. Ultimately, you know, the space that we're moving to is one that's a lot more stable, a lot more kind of considered, right? And the conversations that we want to drive are ones that are really multifaceted and are about long-term wealth creation, as opposed to anything kind of short-term. Crucial difference.
It's the best way to be, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Crazy times.
You've both been frozen on my screen since like 2 minutes into this recording.
Oh, really?
I don't know about
no
you.
Way.
I can see you too.
You've been crystal clear.
Okay. Yeah. I've been making sure that I'm like moving my eyes between both of you still so you at least have an idea that I'm looking at you.
Oh my god, this setup is never gonna be perfect. But it was great, Oscar. It was nice to chat to you. You and giving us your time. That was awesome.
Yeah. Awesome. Oh, thanks so much, both. Really enjoyed it. Nice one.
It was great, and I think there's so much interesting stuff in there for people to like get. It was like
I hope so.
Deep on community and social.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Thanks so much, both.
See ya.